Good afternoon. Welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. My name is Attar Gandhiwal. As Celia mentioned, I'm an author, also by profession, a financial services consultant. I'll be the chair for today's program. Called the Halo Trust in Afghanistan, Clearing the Deadly Debris of War. We also want to welcome our listening audience and internet audience and invite everybody to make sure they visit us online at www.commonwealthclub.org. Now it's my distinct pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker. Dr. Humayun has been the program manager for the Halo Trust in Afghanistan for over 20 years. The Halo Trust is a nonprofit, non-political charity which is dedicated to the removal of deadly debris of war over the past few decades. The Trust has made hundreds of thousands of acres safe in war-torn land since 1988. HALO has worked continuously in Afghanistan despite regime changes, challenges, and to directly assist over 1.6 million families. Yet in Afghanistan, according to some stats in 2014, and still over 1 million people still live within over 500 yards away of landmines. Dr. Humayun will discuss his humanitarian work with the Halo Trust in Afghanistan. But on a personal note, again, being born and raised in Afghanistan and having left the country only about a few months after the Russian invasion in August of 1980, and again, at the time when things were really picking up as far as war, you know, against the resistance against Russian groups and the Russian invaders, or Soviet invaders, I should say. And hearing about the plantation of landmines in the beginning of this work, and it was something that really bothered me because I had studied, of course, and watched, you know, after Vietnam War and the impact of, you know, landmine and the cleaning process that actually takes forever. So it was something that was on my mind, and for all these years, we've been thinking about how much more land all over are being impacted or being planted with landmines. So it's something that for really a huge interest to myself personally, and I'm just delighted again to be here and to be the moderator of today's program and to welcome Dr. Farid Humayun, as I'm really interested, as you are, to really learn about the impact of this amazing humanitarian work that takes place. As you know, in today's world, in the world that we live in, it's that explosion that takes place, and then everybody waits for the next one to occur. It's like, what is the next breaking news? And that's when work of Dr. Humayun and others that make such a big impact in the lives of many around the world get forgotten and is not being mentioned. And again, it's for that reason I'm really excited to have Dr. Humayun here. So let's give him a big welcome, Dr. Farid Humayun.
Thank you very much. Can I start? Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. So thanks very much for the welcome, and thank you very much for coming to attend this speech. I hope that I'll be able to convey the problems and the scale of the problems, and just giving it sort of, covering various aspects of this deadly problem of mines and explosive remnants of war in Afghanistan, which is basically taking many, many lives still. On average, 39 to 40 people on a monthly basis are the victims of mines in ERW. So we can talk for hours about this problem, but what I would like to do is to focus on this. And I think the best way to start this speech is just to show you a little bit of, you know, what we do globally, and then I will zoom in and focus on Afghanistan. So we have a few minutes, global video that I will display, and then it will give you a little bit of information on how we do our business in Afghanistan and worldwide. So thank you very much. What I'm going to discuss with you this afternoon is the problem of mines and ERW, explosive remnants of war in Afghanistan, and what we are doing to remove the threat from these deadly items. Now, already the moderator, Arghani Wals, has introduced me to you. Basically, when we talk about the deadly debris of war, we are really talking about these three issues. First, the problem of landmines. When we talk about landmines, we talk about anti-vehicle mines, AVM, and anti-personnel mines. You know, anti-personnel is clear, it's killing or maiming individuals when you step on them or fiddle with them or, tread on the mines. And anti-vehicle mines or anti-tank mines, old name, is when you drive a vehicle over these mines and so they explode. So we talk about the landmines. We talk about the explosive remnants of war known as ERW. It is another legacy of conflict. In any post-conflict situation, it's different from landmines, of course. The warring factions are using any kind of small and heavy arms against each other, and so they leave these unexploded items on the surface, sometimes subsurface. So that's also a legacy of war, killing and maiming individuals, mainly civilians. And we talk about improvised explosive devices, IEDs, which is quite a touchy issue, and we are really, as a non-governmental organization, as a charity, at this stage of conflict, we are not involved in clearing of IEDs, because IEDs are actually, it's like a part of the current conflict, and it is basically a job of the Afghan security forces, Afghan military and Afghan police, helped by the ISAF, International Assistant Security Forces, to deal with the IEDs. So we are really talking about landmines and explosive remnants of war. So, scale of the problem. I mean, Afghanistan, unfortunately, still remains one of the worst countries affected by landmines and ERW. It's a problem that people know very little about this worldwide, because mainly they think it's a problem of the Ministry of Defenses of various countries or a problem of the army, and so, which is not the case. It is a humanitarian problem, slow-burning humanitarian problem, and it's mainly the problem is dealt with by the non-governmental organization, by NGOs, such as the Halo Trust. I mean, these are, if you look at the this slide, it shows you the remaining hazardous areas in Afghanistan, 517 square kilometer, and the figure goes up and down as we go along and survey more areas. In terms of hazards, over 4,000 hazards. When we talk about hazards, we talk about either minefields or battlefields. So over 4,000 hazards. And what is adding to the problem is 223 square kilometers of new contaminated area left behind by the ISAF forces. Now, you know, by end of this year, the international military forces are leaving Afghanistan. So where they were conducting their live exercises, they left explosive remnants of war, 223 square kilometers. But this is a separate issue. We are not going to focus on this because at the moment, the countries that they contributed troops for the ISAF, they are dealing with this problem. Okay, so let's not confuse the matter. We are really talking about the remaining hazardous areas as a legacy of conflict. And we talk about over 1,600 communities still affected by landmines in ERW. As the moderator said, it's over a million Afghans are still living in very close proximity of minefields and battlefields. And then 259 districts in Afghanistan still remain contaminated by landmines in ERW. Now, Afghanistan is a relatively big country, the size of maybe Texas. About 680,000 square kilometers is the area of Afghanistan. And we have got 400 districts and 34 provinces. So you can see a significant number of districts still remain contaminated by landmines and ERW. And still, it takes the lives of, kills or injures 39 people on a monthly basis in Afghanistan. So it is still a big problem in Afghanistan. Right, so why? Why Afghanistan? I mean, the big question is why this problem is not finishing? Why there is... So this is the big question. Why? Why? So you have to... When you ask this question, why, You should look at the map of Afghanistan. Why Afghanistan? It's the geographical location of Afghanistan being like a crossroad between Central Asia and South Asia, basically, which makes Afghanistan attractive even for Alexander the Great and all the other invaders, right to the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan from 1979 to 1989. It's the geographical location of Afghanistan being in the heart of Asia, and there is something is there that attracts the invaders. The Tsars, the Russians, they were wanted to gain access to the warm waters of Indian Ocean crossing Afghanistan. You see, if you see the map of Afghanistan, it's like a strange map created like a buffer zone between the British controlling the Indian subcontinent, which is now India and Pakistan, and the Tsars, the Russians, which were there. So you can see it's like Afghanistan like squeezed into kind of buffer zone between these countries. And that explains why Afghanistan is a very attractive, well, target and probably destination for the invaders in the course of history. Afghanistan, I'm sure you know about this, is a very traditional society. It's not a very industrialized country, farming, subsistence farming. It's the main kind of, it makes the main economy of Afghan people. A lot of people are living in the countryside. And you see these pictures, like old pictures, people, the Afghans like everything to fight, from camel fighting to cock fighting to the game of buzkashi, where you are carrying a headless calf to a circle. All these, it's very traditional society. So basically, in order to explain why we have this deadly problem of mines and ERW in Afghanistan, you have to read the recent conflict of Afghanistan. I'm talking about the last 30 years. Why? I mean, basically, 1972, there was a regime change in Afghanistan. So the President Dawood expelled, well, King Zahir Shah was in exile, and his cousin President Dawood seized power. Then 1978, we had this communist coup backed by the Soviet Union, and the communists came to power. Then Soviet invasion of Afghanistan from 79 to 89, basically, which is basically like the start of this dark chapter in the history of Afghanistan, because this explains all the problems right now we see in Afghanistan, started by the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. Of course, the Soviets washed their hands and walked away and said nothing, it's got nothing to do with us. And then you have the communist regime of Dr. Najibullah from 1989 to 1992, and then Mujahideen interfactional fighting from 92 to 96, and then the Taliban rule from 96 to 2001, and Afghanistan post 9/11. So you have to see the various sessions of mine laying and the contamination of land in Afghanistan within the sort of hand to hand and parallel within these historical periods in the recent history of conflict in Afghanistan. So, Soviet invasion, 79 to 89, and I will not explain this to you why, but they invaded Afghanistan to, basically, it was at the height of the Cold War, and the Russians, the Soviets, wanted to defend the communists who were in power, and it's called PDPA, the People's Democratic Party of Afghanistan. It had two factions, blah, blah. So they invaded under this name. But, of course, the Russians, the Soviets, they had their own strategic goals in Afghanistan. So, and then the Mujahideen from 92 to 1996, as you can see, the seven groups based in Pakistan, the Shia groups based in Iran, eight groups. So post the collapse of Najibullah's communist regime, of course, these groups entered to Afghanistan. They already had bases in Afghanistan. So this was the start like of a chaos in Afghanistan and the civil war. And then this is the kind of map. You just before 9/11, the Taliban were in control of a big part of Afghanistan. A small strip of land remains in the hand of the former Mujahideen government, represented by the Northern Alliance, or United Front. As you can see, this was the situation before 9/11. So, to summarize it, the mine laying in Afghanistan, you can actually summarize into three sessions. The first session, the Russians laid mines, of course. Why? Because they were protecting their posts, and also along the ridge lines, where they were bringing their military convoys from the former Soviet Union. They laid mines for the protection of their own forces because they were constantly coming under attack by Mujahideen forces. Now, Mujahideen laid mines because when the Russians were being attacked, they were sending their tanks and armored personnel carriers to attack the villages from where they were coming under fire. So obviously, Mujahideen, they had access to the mines given to them by the Pakistani military intelligence, the ISI, and so they laid mines, against the Russians. So this is the first session. The second session of mine laying is between the Northern Alliance, between various Mujahideen fighters from 1992 to 1996, as I explained earlier. What happened is 1992, Najibullah's regime collapsed. The Mujahideen group seized power. There was interfactional fighting, and they had access to landmines and ERW. So indiscriminately, they used against each other. And this heavily contaminated Afghanistan with more mines and ERW, on top of what the Russians and the communist regime of Najibullah left. And then the last session, of course, the Northern Alliance, which was the remnant of Mujahideen group, was fighting against the Taliban. And in this period of history, the Taliban also laid mines sporadically, because the Taliban were almost always in offensive, and the Northern Alliance were in defensive position. So they laid more mines. Part of the history, Iranian mines were laid in Afghanistan because the Northern Alliance had access to Iranian mines, and mines were laid in Afghanistan, mainly Iranians. Now, from the type of landmines you can find in Afghanistan, you can actually judge about the history of mine laying. If it's like mainly Soviet mines, PMN, PMN2, you can say it's like 1980s, early 1990s. If it's like Iranian mines, you find it's mainly in the recent history of the conflicts. Like, we have mines manufactured even near 2000, mainly Iranian mines, YM1, YM2, and so on. So now we know what has happened, why Afghanistan remains heavily contaminated with landmines and ERW. It's because there's been an ongoing, slow-burning conflict going on in Afghanistan for the last 30 years, and obviously the stakeholders, the parties involved in this conflict, they laid mines against each other, all right? Access to stockpiles. One group laid mines against the other. There was no proper recording of the minefields. Obviously, the Russians, they laid mines. They didn't declare the maps of the minefields. Very later in the history of conflict, the Russians were willing to release the maps, but this was too little, too late. Right. So the impact of mines in ERW in Afghanistan, lots of impact. First of all, the civilian casualties. I mean, this is not very updated. As you can see, it's updated until the 30th of April. You can see just immediately after the fall of the Taliban regime, you see there were nearly 1,000 accidents. In 2002, 1,000 accidents. As you can see, a huge number of Afghans being killed or injured because of landmines and ERW. And because of clearance, you can see up to 30th of April this year, the number has dropped to just over 100. Still very high, but you can see, it's a gradual decline in the number of civilian casualties in Afghanistan, and it's the direct result of clearance, primarily by the Halo Trust being the largest mine action organization in Afghanistan and the other implementing partners, right? So this is one of the impact, massive civilian casualties in Afghanistan. The second impact is, after Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, about 5 million Afghans turned into refugees and IDPs, internally displaced people. And this is like a quarter of the Afghan population. Now, if you ignore the current conflict in Syria, after the Second World War, this was the largest displacement of civilian population in the globe. 25% of the Afghan population kind of displaced because of the war. Most of these people ended up in the neighboring Iran and Pakistan. Some ended up in Western countries. So this was another impact. And you can see if 25% of the population of a country moves outside, the impact, social, economic, humanitarian, will be enormous in Afghanistan, in any country. And so mine victims, this is a picture I took, I think it's an year-old picture. It is in a place called, the people that they are familiar with Afghanistan, it's Tahar province. It's a place called Shah-e-Palang. And it's just in a small village. You can see the number of amputees, number of people that they have lost their hands or limbs, you know, their hands and legs, and just in one village, small village. And these people are, you know, they're mainly farmers, you know. So you can see in a small village, it is the kind of impact is leaving on the economy, especially rural economy. Also, the mines and explosive remnants of war had huge impact on Afghan economy and slowing and stopping the development of the country. So infrastructure, rural rehabilitation, and so on and so forth. Right. So we now know that the problem in Afghanistan was big. Still, the problem is there. We know some of the impacts of mines, these deadly debris of war, mines and ERW. So what has been done and what needs to be done, right? So luckily, we have a very good program in Afghanistan. It's called Mine Action Program for Afghanistan, MAPA. And it is well-coordinated and well-run. And so when we talk about mine action, you see people are not just talking about mine clearance. Mine clearance is only a component of the mine action. When we talk about mine action, we talk about survey of minefields and battlefields. We talk about mines and ERW clearance, which is our specialty. We talk about mine risk education, MRE. We talk about advocacy. And we talk about victim assistance. These are all part of the mine action. So mine action is just a package. And a component of the mine action is clearance. A big component is clearance. But it has other aspects of it. So basically, the MAPA, the Mine Action Program for Afghanistan, of Afghanistan, is in charge of coordination and implementation. And also, in the mine actions business, we talk about these three layers. So the strategic layer, which is set by the government and the donors. The coordination layer, which is done by the government of Afghanistan, and the Mine Action Coordination Center for Afghanistan, called the MACA, M-A-C-C-A, and then the implementation layer, which is basically done by organizations such as the HALO Trust, right? So, focusing on this, what HALO has done and what HALO is doing, well, we are a very large institution in Afghanistan with over 3,000 staff and covering huge area in Afghanistan since 1988. So in Afghanistan, in order to address the problem of mines and ERW, we talk about one program, two projects. So the main focus of HALO Trust in Afghanistan is humanitarian demining, right? Another aspect of our operation is clearance of bombs and shells and so on, which we call it weapon ammunition disposal, as you can see here, all the legacy of war. So small caliber ammunition, large caliber ammunition, cluster munitions, all these deadly weapons and munition left behind from war killing people. So the humanitarian situation in Afghanistan was dire after 9/11 because suddenly there was an influx of millions of refugees back to the country from neighboring Iran and Pakistan after the fall of the Taliban regime. Meanwhile, a few hundred thousand people were living as IDPs, internally displaced people. Unfortunately, a lot of these people were displaced from the frontline areas. When they returned back, of course, they all wanted to settle back in their villages and homes and their livelihoods, and all of this was like in the frontline areas. So this really posed a big challenge to organizations such as the HALO Trust. I remember back in 2002, we had like daily liaison with the International Organization for Migration, IOM, with UNHCR, with an organization called ACTED, and we were like daily, on daily basis, repatriating and settling villagers from one place to another, clearing areas, prioritizing clearance, which area we needed to clear first, and then second, and then third. So, for our weapon ammunition disposal is relatively new. It started in 2003, and it continues now. The nature of mine clearance and explosive remnants of war, well, what weapon ammunition disposal is different. Although it's the same aim, it has the same aim, saving the lives of civilians. But the nature of the activity is different. Mine clearance is slow. We are dealing with an enemy sort of buried in the ground. You need technology to find these things, detect them, isolate them, and destroy them. The ERW, they are large items. They are either on the surface or they are buried and they are easy to detect with metal detectors. It's a relatively quicker process, but this is more killer than mines, actually, because it can cause multiple casualties. And the other problem with these deadly things is the insurgents can use these for making improvised explosive devices, the IEDs, which are more killer than mines and ERW. So our humanitarian portfolio, luckily, is funded by various countries, including the United States, Britain, and other countries that you can see here. And unfortunately, it doesn't mean that we are very rich and we have got a lot of money. It's not like that. Mine action is generally like hand-to-mouth situation. One year, you secure some funding. Next year, you need to struggle again. And because what you need in mine clearance is consistency. So you need to finish a district. You need to finish a village. You need to clear the entire community. Otherwise, more accidents will happen because the civilians, the local people, will assume that the area is cleared, but you clear one area, you leave another area, so more accidents will happen. So what you need in humanitarian demining to address the problem of mines in ERW is size, massive. It's very labor-intensive. You read the journals, you read this and that, they talk about technology, they even talk about using cockroaches to smell mines, they talk about rats too. These things don't work. What works is hundreds and thousands of deminers recruited locally, equipped, and then trained, and then used for humanitarian demining. This is work. This is just one of our projects in Western Region in Herat Province. We have 550 staff in one province. So what you need is deminers to work with their hands and knees to clear mines and ERW. Multi-ethnic workforce. This is extremely important in Afghanistan because if you don't recruit deminers from the mine-affected communities, unfortunately, in Afghanistan, it's a sad news, I would say, that certain communities are not happy for deminers to bring from other communities and work in their area and so on. They say, look, we have been affected by landmines in ERW, so we want our men of fighting age, if you call them, to be recruited, trained, and clear our own community. So it is very important in the Afghan context that you recruit deminers locally, use them, and this works. This works perfectly well. It worked very well for Halo Trust, and it works for all other agencies. So it is something to bear in mind. And also to mention is the former fighters, the ex-combatants. There's a very good program going on. It's called the Afghanistan Peace and Reintegration Program, where Halo Trust is also involved in this. And these young men, men of fighting age, they are described as the firewood of insurgency. So you just under the High Peace Council, HPC, there's a vetting process going on, and they just join the peace process, and that's the way ahead. You provide them with dignified job, and you recruit them as deminers, and it works perfectly well. So this is another engagement. It's a kind of win-win situation. So former fighters, now this is they are the same people, now they are deminers. Right. So as I said, labor-intensive. You don't really need very high technology, high-tech for mine clearance. What you need is just to train like a farmer for 1 month, and then the only piece of technology they have is just metal detector and they are finding mines efficiently and effectively. And the job of a deminer is to find the mine, isolate it, and then excavate it and leave it. They are not destroying the mine. The mine being destroyed by the command group, by the team leader or section commander. Their job is not to destroy the mines. So they are not dealing with explosives. Manual demining, you have seen in the pictures in the Halo Global video, is basically manual demining is the backbone of Halo demining operation. being very labor intensive, so we recruit from communities. But in addition to that, what we do is we are using mechanical units quite heavily in support of manual demining to find mines buried deep in the ground, because most of the mines, like the area has been mined, the areas have been mined, and then buildings collapsed. And using a metal detector will be very, very difficult and hard to find a mine. So we use a variety of technology, mainly in support of manual demining to find the mines. So we talked about technology. I mean, yes, technology is important. There are certain types of landmines that they have got very little metal. And these mines will not be found using metal detectors. So we have technology in hand, like these machines. They are equipped with ground-penetrating radar. And they are equipped, they can find mines with minimum metal, such as the Italian TC6 mines or Iranian M19 mines that you find a lot in Afghanistan. Now, I would like to discuss with you just one point, is that from the 517 square kilometer remained in Afghanistan, about 60% of those of the area actually contaminated with anti-tank mines, anti-vehicle mines. So you have to have the technology in hand to deal with these deadly items. And we also this is an American technology. It's a rotary mine comb. It's a U.S. Department of Defense project that Halo Trust is efficiently using in western region of Herat, and it works very well. And we are very lucky. We are getting two more of these machines. One is right now is being shipped from America to Afghanistan. It's in transit. And the other from the UK. And these are very, very efficient. As you can see, they are finding mines easily. And I don't want to, because of the time, I don't want to go in much detail with this. But this is a prime machine designed for clearance of anti-tank mines. So battle area clearance is another issue, that another way that we are addressing these deadly weapons. Basically, a surface check. You can see these bomblets. One of these bomblets can kill between 7 to 8, 9, 10 people if they kind of explode. You can see this is a kind of surface check, finding explosive remnants of war and destroying it. It's done by these people. And then mine risk education, as you have seen in the Halo Global video, it is a very important aspect of operations in Afghanistan, providing education for the children and other mine-affected communities. So if you look at this slide, actually, we are covering a huge geographical area in Afghanistan, as you can see the area highlighted. So we are covering 17 provinces out of 34 provinces and 50 districts. And this includes our mainstream demining operation and our weapon ammunition disposal. So this map you see is the area covered by our WAD operation, weapon ammunition disposal. And I explained to you the difference between mine clearance and WAD. Mines are actually, our mainstream focus is humanitarian demining, but the WAD operation is focused on clearance of bombs and shells and rockets and mortars and whatever is on the surface or buried in the ground. So capabilities is very important. This is just one project. How much time I've got? I'm okay? Yeah. So in order to achieve the goal, of course, you need the capabilities. And I mean, we talked about labor being labor intensive, mine clearance being labor intensive. 3,000 plus staff we have in Afghanistan, so 550 vehicles, you know. So people will say, okay, is how long will this continue? Is there a light at the end of the tunnel? The answer is yes. By 2023, inshallah, God willing, Afghanistan will be free, will be impact-free. But, of course, there are conditions. The funding should continue to come to Afghanistan. And if there are, like, crises here and there, it's not helping the Afghan situation, unfortunately. But we need to focus and make sure that the resources are mobilized and Afghanistan is not become a victim of crisis elsewhere. So, as you can see here, you know, huge achievements Halo Trust had in Afghanistan since 1989 until now. You can see huge areas have been cleared, and I'm not going to read you the figures, but just see the number of laid mines have been cleared just by Halo Trust, and I'm not talking about other agencies. If you see this pie chart, you can see a lot of the explosive remnants of war are actually dug from the ground. As you can see here, it's huge, 76%. So actually, in these areas, we actually send our teams and we find them and we dig them out, because otherwise they will be used by, I don't know, insurgent groups as a charge for making IEDs. So just I would like to draw your attention to these figures. Over 26,000 tons of ammunition have been destroyed so far. And you can see this figure of over 500,000 of landmines that were destroyed from the stockpiles. Because if you don't address the problem of stockpiles, these mines will be laid again, and the more areas will be contaminated. So you have to consider the problem of stockpiles of mines as well. As I said to you, over 26,000 tons of these deadly items have been destroyed, and we are, and on average, between 76 to 100 tons of ammunition we are destroying on a monthly basis in Afghanistan, from call-outs, from digging the ground, and so on and so forth. We also addressed the problem of small arm and light weapons in Afghanistan by destroying these items. Also, a lot of heavy weapons have been deactivated, including the rocket launchers that they were loaded, left unattended. You can see it can be fired on a village or on a city, on a town. So these have been dealt with along with the Afghan Ministry of Defense. A lot of heavy weapons have been deactivated by the Halo Trust in collaboration with the Ministry of Defense. Also, these huge stockpiles of ammunition you can see in the pictures across the four regions in Afghanistan we have dealt with. These have all been destroyed. This is Shahidai in Herat. This is Shibargon guided missiles. It's northern Afghanistan, left behind from the... finished? I can carry on for another few minutes? Okay. So in total, I just want to... time is always a problem. So I just want to show you some last slide. So basically, we are conducting the last survey in Afghanistan. It's a MINES ERW impact-free community survey, and it's the last survey that we are conducting. And we are actually releasing districts and provinces and communities from the impact of MINES and ERW, and it's kind of village to village by village survey. We are canceling some existing minefields because there are human activities, they are no longer minefields. We are destroying ammunition in these villages. We are conducting MRE in madrasas. We are conducting village by village survey conducting MRE in the schools and also mosques. And the last one is basically data management. We have an excellent system of data management. This is a national contamination database, which is held by the Mine Action Coordination Center of Afghanistan. So this is like a bank storing all the information, and you can go and basically find out which village is contaminated, which district is contaminated, the level of contamination, and so on. And of course, there are challenges ahead. Of course, the main challenge being security, funding. One of the biggest problems is what I call donor fatigue, because donors, they have been funding this program for many years. We try hard to avoid donor fatigue. And then can Afghanistan, the big question is, can Afghanistan achieve the 2023 target, as obliged by the Ottawa Convention, Mine Ban Treaty, to be impact-free? Well, we talk about the known hazards. So that's the big question. If the funding continues to come to Afghanistan, to the Mine Action Program, God willing, this will happen. So to summarize it, to wrap up, basically, mines and ERW in Afghanistan are sort of deadly legacy of conflict in Afghanistan left behind from the last 30 years or so. And in a way, it's continuing in Afghanistan because of the insurgency. So we have proper infrastructure in place, trained Afghan workforce within Halo Trust and other agencies to deal with the problem, and we know how to do it. We have the technology in hand. What we need is the donor support and the political and security climate to be able to conduct our operations. With this, thank you very much. I know time is a limiting factor. I am available for any questions.
Thank you very much, Dr. Farid Humayun. Why don't you come on in? Would you like to stand there, or we can join me right here?
Sure, yeah.
Let's do that. Thank you very much. Again, wonderful information and Lots of questions, so let's make sure we make the best of this time to answer some questions.
Please.
And I do want to remind our internet and radio audiences that this is the California Commonwealth Crop Program. I'm the moderator, Attar Gandhiwal. So let's go ahead and start with the first question.
Please.
But I really appreciate, again, on a personal note, that for all the wonderful work you and your outstanding staff do. So
thank you.
Thank you. The first question is, any data on the risk to those clearing all these mines and all the work that goes on, yeah. Of course, what's the risk there?
Generally speaking, it's a safe job. It's not the number of accidents we had in the demining business is less than what you see in the construction business. So generally, it's a safe operation because the only time that accidents happen is when deminers are not following the standard operating procedures and not wearing their personal protective equipment. Having said that, there are some casualties, I would say, few hundred deminers from 1989, not just with HALO, but of course with other agencies, they have become the victim of mines. But it was primarily due to probably lack of discipline or not following the procedures. But generally, it's a safe business. On average, there is like we have one or two demining accidents on annual basis, but generally it's a safe job.
Okay, thank you. From a humanitarian standpoint, as you do this wonderful work and as you and your staff work in all over Afghanistan in the areas, what is the reaction of ordinary people, the people of the villages and others that actually, you know, as we saw in the picture and the impact on such a, let's say, a small area. But how do they react to your work?
I think generally they appreciate mine clearance. I think because we are working very close with communities and the request for clearance is coming from communities. So we are not imposing mine action on communities. The request comes to the authorities and then referred to HALO. And then so there are five steps involved from request for clearance until we clear an area and then hand them over to the local authorities and to the village shuras, village councils. So without the collaboration and cooperation of the communities, of course, we are unable to do our business. So generally, they very much appreciate mine clearance. However, there are exceptions. There are problems. Sometimes some people are skeptical about mine clearance. They are saying why the miners are here, especially in the Afghan culture, as you know. You have to have the mining camps away from the villages so they will not be like interrupting our ordinary lives of the village people and so on. But I would say 98% it is very good and they appreciate clearance. There are areas that we face problems, but you know, we generally it's a kind of win-win situation for the clearance agencies and for the communities.
Wonderful, thank you. Two things, two of the photos, that images that we saw, which I really appreciated in the question actually from the audience in regards to the education of women in regards to all of this work. And that's much appreciated because in that one picture that we saw, obviously there was a bunch of girls right sitting up front. And that is just a wonderful, wonderful image to see. But can you elaborate more on that as to really with all of the restrictions that do exist within the villages and the areas of tribal, is that real a challenge or is that an impact that hopefully the kind of work that continues?
Well, luckily, mine action is addressing as the beneficiaries of the mine action are both men and women of both genders. And so this is not a problem. However, within the mine action, we are fully aware of the issue of gender. Within HALO Trust, we have ladies that they are working in offices, in the finance, in logistics, and also in the members of the livelihood teams. But you have to know within the Afghan culture, it's not possible to have ladies as deminers. And elsewhere, like in Sri Lanka, in Cambodia, and other HALO programs, they employ, even in Somaliland, which is a Muslim country, they employ women. But because the beneficiaries of mine clearance are of both genders, and we are really helping the families and communities. So this is not a hot issue with regard to the mine action program in Afghanistan.
Well, thank you. And the other part, which is really an interesting photo in an image that we saw again in the participation of local, the recruits that you have. And just to let everybody know, and this is what I've written in my book and what we talk about quite a bit, is that that's the kind of approach that should have been used in all of those 14 years of the last 14 years, I would say, that the success of Afghanistan would have actually come. Afghanistan would have never been in the situation that it is if we had relied on tribal,
yes,
just local areas, giving the authority and autonomy, money and resources to the local area.
Yes.
Let them build it. Let them defend it. But what we did was, of course, the international community in particular, of course,
yes,
has given the power and people telling one villager or warlord from another village to come and tell me what to do.
Yeah.
So that's very unfortunate, yeah, but I'm just so happy to see that your organization is involved in recruiting local. So let's go ahead and ask you another question.
Please.
Here. And that is, this is a very big question. Who determined the current borders of Afghanistan?
Yeah, this is a big issue, unfortunately, and it's like a very touchy issue as well. You know, we have this, other borders are clear as far as we know, and they're on in the Central Asia and so on, and we have the Oxus River, which we call the Amu River. Oxus is what the Alexander the Great called this river. Oxus, he called Afghanistan between Oxus and Indus. Indus is now part of Pakistan. So Alexander the Great called Afghanistan a country between, a nation between Oxus and Indus. So this line of division, we have the Deoran line of division, which is there, and it's a fact in history, and it's up to the Afghan and Pakistani people to decide about this. But this is one of the problems between the two countries, and one factor in Afghan instability is because of this. So to answer your question is, I don't know, but maybe we should have a lawyer jerga on this. And this
lots of free borders out there. Okay, well, this is a big one, of course, another big one that's in the minds of every single individual concerned, whether it be Afghan or other citizens of the world that care. What would happen as U.S. withdraws and if the Taliban are strong enough to take over?
I think this is the big question, and I think it's a political question, obviously. But as far as I know, I think the situation in Afghanistan right now is different from the situation of 1990s when the Russians left Afghanistan. We have proper Afghan security forces known as ANSF. We have proper army and police and so on. I don't think that there will be complete disengagement of international military forces. Afghanistan needs another 10 years of transition. And this 10 years is, I think the international community is somehow committed to help the Afghans in Afghanistan, whether it's economic aid or some kind of advisory role or training the Afghan security forces. I don't think that there will be a complete disengagement of international forces. And I think that these two challenges we had recently on the 5th of April, which was the election, the first round of election, and then the runoff, which was on the 14th of June, it was a clear indication that the Afghan security forces are capable of maintaining law and order, at least in the population centers. But, you know, it very much depends how much the international community remain engaged in Afghanistan. And I would strongly urge and advise the international community to not to forget Afghanistan, otherwise Afghanistan will again kind of collapse, and nobody wants that.
Well, we realize what happened after the Russian Russians left, and of course that's a big lesson learned. But again, in the heels of that question, in that comment, your operation is extremely important and very much valuable. It is really, so you do remain optimistic that your operation in particular will be sustained, will remain intact in light of all of the challenges that exist?
Yes, I mean, if you see the history of conflict in Afghanistan, it was up and down, and HALO has been through all the kind of turbulence in the recent conflict in Afghanistan. When we started the operation, the Russians were still in Afghanistan, the Soviets, and then during the Taliban were there, during Mujahideen and so on. So I'm very optimistic, and I'm sure that, God willing, inshallah, this HALO will be unaffected, and we will carry on working because we are there for a good reason. We are helping the people of Afghanistan, regardless of their ethnic, you know, religious, or geographical location. We are just there helping, not just through mine clearance, but other means like provision of medical aid and some disaster relief and so on. So I have every confidence that HALO will maintain operating in Afghanistan, and as it has proved previously that it did so.
Wonderful. Well, again, I want to remind our radio and internet audience that it is the California Commonwealth Club program. Halo Trust in Afghanistan and the wonderful work that Dr. Farid Humayuni and his group do. Now, as far as, again, the forces leaving, well, let's see if we can tackle this question, which is really a big one. And I know you talked about the different areas, as we saw on the map, as to which are the areas that you've been working hard. Are there any particular areas of the country that have been hard to penetrate or go to? For example, the southern part of Afghanistan, which is heavily, obviously, controlled areas of Taliban. Does that present a bigger challenge?
Yes. Well, obviously, the security situation can be very fluid in certain areas, but you have to see Afghanistan within sort of the context of that particular area. I mean, basically, security can be bad in one area for a while, and then it will get better, and then it will get worse somewhere else. And so I think generally the Mine Action Program in Afghanistan is capable of conducting operation almost anywhere in Afghanistan, and as you have seen on the map. And we are not just talking about Halo Trust, but other implementing partners as well. So, yes, of course, there will be areas that because of, you know, it will be like fighting will be going on. Of course, it will be impossible to work in those areas. But generally, even if we cover 85% of Afghanistan, I think that itself is an achievement. And we just hope that more areas will open up so we will be able to deliver our humanitarian clearance in those areas as well.
Well, thank you very much. Those are the written questions. And is there maybe a one or two questions that we can take, the last two questions from the audience? Are there any? Anything that we have not been able to cover?
Well, I'm not sure if you covered it or not, but my father stepped on a landmine in World War II in Normandy, and it seems to me that war has changed. I mean, he was a trained engineer, and his life was ruined. He survived, but his life was ruined. And it seems like, it seems more like a terrorism thing with civilians being targeted, or is it really just mines left over from the Russians and war?
I think that unfortunately mines, they don't discriminate between anyone, so anyone can tread on a mine and be a victim of mines, animals, human beings, and so they are like described in Afghanistan as hidden killers, and they don't recognize their victims, basically. Anyone can be a victim of mines. But yes, I think that this is a very kind of dreadful weapon to use in the warfare, and fortunately Afghanistan has signed the Ottawa Convention back in 2003, which basically the use and the importation and the production and the stockpile of mines is prohibited now according to the Ottawa Convention. And I think that more countries have signed the Ottawa Convention, and also Afghanistan has signed in the ban on use of cluster munition as well. So I think that the legislation is there, and we just need to stick to those legislation and implement those.
And a question. Yes. What I heard was the United States had refused to sign any sort of a treaty not disseminating landmines. Is that still the stance of this country? Do you know?
Yes, I think the United States didn't sign the Ottawa Convention. But we have to bear in mind that many other countries also did so, didn't sign the convention. But we also should know that the United States is one of the biggest donors in humanitarian mine clearance worldwide. So this needs to be appreciated. Certainly in case of Afghanistan, they are providing a large amount of funding to the humanitarian mine clearance. So I think that needs to be mentioned and appreciated.
Of course. One more question. We have one time for one more. And go ahead, please.
I just wanted to thank you very, very much for your work. You know, it's valiant efforts that you've put together over a long period of time. As somebody who was born here, whose parents came from Afghanistan after the Soviet occupation, and just hearing about all the things in the last decade, you know, it's really admirable that you're doing.
Thank you.
All the Afghans and Afghan-Americans here in this country, I think, should be aware. And on top of that, it's been very efficient, and numbers don't lie. So I'm definitely appreciative, and, you know, thank you for your work. Hope that we can continue it. And which leads me to my question.
Please.
Is, you know, there's obviously question marks after a potential U.S. withdrawal. What is it that we can do to really, really bring this international attention and really, really let the world and, you know, Afghan-Americans, Afghans, and all groups, even in this country, know that this is an efficient project and that we need to continue and sustain it?
I think this is a very good question and very valid question. We know that in America, thousands of Afghans are living, and also in Western Europe. I think just having this theme on and basically making sure that the United States government, being and the American people being a large donor for the Mayan Action, so this momentum is on, and they continue to provide to support Afghanistan, whether it's Mayan Action or economic aid or whatever. I think that's the main thing they can do, basically, and the Afghans live here. Just having these kind of discussions, raising the portfolio of the Mayan Action, and making sure that Afghanistan is not losing priority and momentum when it comes to the distribution of aid. I think that just having this topic on within America and within the American people, and also the Afghans who are living here, if they can do some volunteer work, like in terms of, I don't know, fundraising, or like having some schemes to visiting Afghanistan, so we can tell them, they can be sort of eyewitness of what we are doing. Obviously, Halo Trust will very much welcome any visitor, Afghan or American or Afghan Americans, to come to Afghanistan, and we will be able to host them. So I think the biggest thing I can see is that, unfortunately, there's a lack of understanding about what's going on in Afghanistan, and it's kind of very much forgotten. So I think that this needs to be brought.
Thank you. Thank you.
Shouldn't be swept under the carpet, as they say.
Well, we really appreciate Dr. Farid Humayun, and this is why we really appreciate having you here. The gentleman has just indicated, these are our youth, actually up-and-coming Afghans that we really count on. And again, the awareness that can be raised in here is because of your presence here, that we're committed to mobilize our communities and everybody to really bring this to the forefront. It is, again, very much appreciated for all of the wonderful work you do. And this brings us to the close, and it's a Commonwealth Club of California program called Halo Trust in Afghanistan. We also want to thank our audience, all of you, and also the internet and radio audiences. Thank you very much. That officially brings this session to a close.
Thank you very much. Thank you.